Hi, I'm Sammy Campbell.
And I'm Susie Starlight.
Welcome to the Supertone Show.
Tomorrow.
Roxy Music, Manifesto. From their sixth studio album, Manifesto, released in March 1979 on EG Records in the UK, that was King Crimson's management label, Polydor in Europe, and Atco in the US of A, reached number 7 in the UK album charts and number 23 in the USA.
Atco. I always think of detergent or cleaning. Is that, what is it? Acme?
Oh, I don't know. I was thinking anyway, Acme, like Roadrunner.
Yeah, and Acme and all that stuff. Like, anyway, let's forget about detergents and cleaning products. Let's talk more about Manifesto and that bass.
Well, I was going to say, I think the bass player's on LSD because he's whittering on. He's like in this other world. And it's the most beautiful babble of beauty. I don't even know how to describe it because
it's a beautiful babble of beauty. That's a fantastic way of describing it.
He's just warbling away to himself and then suddenly, but when it comes in, I was waiting. I was just like, okay, what you do? And then it goes, ba-dum, dum, dum. It's just like that groove when it kicks in. Gah! It gets you.
It does. And, you know, I mean, it's all about, that track is all about the bass and I can never believe how loud it is in the track. And the fact that really he doesn't play a bass line per se, except for those bits where he goes back to the do, you know, great. And the thing about Roxy is that I really love Paul Thompson's drums. And, you know, the whole band were great. Manzanera, Eno had left, of course, by this time, because Paul Carrack's on keys here, which is, you know, Paul Carrack, great Hammond player, actually, but fabulous singer, you know, I mean, yeah. He's got it all, that chat.
I've seen him live, actually, at Manchester.
Yeah, well, did you?
Yeah, I was just graduated, actually. I went with my friend Steph, she was an art designer for TV, and she said, do you want to come see Paul Carrack? So we went along.
Right, because he was in Mike and the Mechanics, wasn't he? He was a singer.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just trying to remind myself.
It's really weird, isn't it? It's like the web we weave of who knows who and who played in whose band. And
well, you know, I really love Roxy Music. If you've listened to any of our shows over the past 139, you'll know that we play quite a lot of Roxy Music. And they were one of the original art rock bands, really, because I think they took everything from, you know, the Velvet Underground. They took all that glam thing going on.
The avant-garde thing,
yeah. And, you know, they really made something very special. And to me, I think they are the ultimate art rock band. And you posted something on Facebook, wasn't it? About the progressive rock and it all
in German,
the family tree.
I know. I did that yesterday because I saw it ages ago, and I was just clearing out a load of, because we're filming videos for the new single. It's the Voting Machine at the moment.
Which we'll talk about in a minute.
Yeah. So I'm just like clearing all my data, and I came across this on my desktop. And I'm like, oh, I remember this, and it was like, it's fantastic because it's like the family tree of because. The one thing is really difficult is how do you describe stuff? Because it's, you know, music is emotion. If you want to sell your track to a film, they always ask you what the feel is. Well, no, they say what the feel is. I mean, they might go, it sounds a bit like this, but they're actually more interested in mood than genre.
Yeah.
So, and when we say, oh, we've got Starlight One, it's an art rock, art pop, prog rock, elements of, you know, people, and a lot of people, when we've been talking to them, they kind of know, but they don't know.
Yeah.
So if you say, okay, if you like Roxy Music, you'll love Starlight One. And that is really a nutshell because that kind of is it. But we're not Roxy Music.
We're not.
But it's that kind of, it's a language problem, I think. I think we've got a communication word issue when, you know, and that's another reason why we like to speak with music, you know, and lyrics kind of, I don't know, accentuate. They put, like, you know, a line underneath something, or on a painting they might just accentuate a shadow or something. The lyrics do that to the music. It's a musical painting and it's to evoke a connection with you or how you feel or to teach you something or to inspire you to look at something. I mean, that's really what it's all about. I mean, after all, we are humans living on planet Earth with a limited time. So we need to actually just think about what's going on. Love.
Absolutely. And just going back to that sort of chart,
yes.
There were like four branches, weren't there? And yeah. Like, you know, obviously with prog rock, there's Pink Floyd, there's King Crimson, there's, you know, a lot of acts sort of at the top that start to filter through. And of course, on the left-hand side, it talks about art rock and art pop.
Yes.
You know, art pop.
I'm looking now.
Being Devo and later on, of course, you know. But Roxy Music's always in that thread along, of course, with Bowie, etc. But when that track starts, it always reminds me of Eye of the Tiger. Dig, 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 dig.
True, actually.
You expect at any minute that riff to come in.
Yeah, but it's so Roxy Music, isn't it? Because I remember my parents bought me Avalon on vinyl for Christmas. And I remember my brother was out for the day, so he let me go into his bedroom so I could use his proper record deck. And I had Brandy and Baby Sham, and I just ignored all the adults that day. And I just went upstairs, lay on the floor in the dark with his cans on, and listened to Avalon. Like, and it took me into a completely new world. The sound was just phenomenal. And it's got that kind of Roxy Music-esque kind of ethereal feel to it, actually.
Yeah, that's right.
Funny, isn't it?
A bit later on, the production values are quite different.
Yeah,
but
they
are. But the thing Roxy, of course, is Phil Manzanera on guitar. And Phil Manzanera started off playing for the gearheads out there, white Fender Stratocaster, and very quickly graduated to a red Firebird, Gibson Firebird.
Get out of here.
And which he bought really cheap. He saw it for sale because Brian Ferry didn't want him to. He originally used 335, and he said, "We're not having that on any record covers. You're not going to play that." So he had a white Strat, and then he bought this red Firebird, which he's very well known for, of course. And when we were looking at doing the tour this time, our Starlight One tour, which is starting in a couple of weeks' time in the UK, is it 14 days?
Yeah.
14 or 16 days, I can't remember now. But anyway, it's starting on the 29th at the
September at the Pioneer Club in St Albans.
Yeah, so we're kicking off there. But if you want to have a look at it, it's starlight-campbell.com/gigs. You will find it there. And you know, love to see you. But going back to the Firebird, so, you know, I saw that, and of course it's art rock, and they look fantastic. Johnny Winter always looked fantastic with it. Eric Clapton, when he used one, looked fantastic. And Susie has the bass equivalent.
I do, actually.
A Thunderbird, which was made specifically for you by Spencer Lull, Mike Lull Guitars.
In Washington, USA.
Yeah, and it's called, you can't call it a Thunderbird, of course.
No, it's a Starlight T4. Yeah.
Custom made for you.
Yes.
Yeah, it's got stainless steel frets. It's got all.
It's my dragon bass.
Yeah.
We fly. A mighty beast of bass.
Absolutely. And anyway, so it's red, signal red. So when I saw it, I thought, well, you know, for this new tour, why don't we have matching guitars?
You're so funny because we never have his and hers.
No. But we contacted a friend called Nick Huber, who we met pretty recently. It's a long story, actually, which we won't go into tonight. But I asked Nick if he'd make me a guitar, and he said no. He said he doesn't sort of make custom instruments.
Yeah, Germany,
But he said you need to speak to Michael Springer in France. So I did.
And we
ended up with this amazing guitar, which I'm actually looking at right now. It's a fantastic thing. The pickups have been worn by our friend Matthew Biscata at House of Tone.
House of Tone. Pickups.
So it's really interesting. So we got these matching instruments now, red and stuff. And we just did a video the other day at the Teju power station, helped by a great friend, Danny
Ferreira.
Yeah.
And Daniela was fantastic.
She did a lot of the filming.
Great filming.
But anyway, back to that. So that's the whole art rock thing. And back to Phil Manzanera, and then back to Manifesto.
Yes.
And the final thing I want to say about Manifesto is, firstly, Phil Brown, our big mate, was one of the engineers.
Phil!
Because it was recorded at Ridge Farms and Island Studios, then Basing Street. And also, what is really, really cool about it is that it's just beautiful. That's what's cool about it. It's just beautiful. That's all I'm going to say. Supertones Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell. That was Sliver of Ice by Anne Honey and the Johnsons, released as a single on the 13th of June on the album My Back Was a Bridge for You to Cross, which was released on the 7th of July on Remote Control and Rough Tape Trade record label. What a delicious vocal. What a very, very sad song. And that is all about Lou Reed, is it not?
Yeah, it is, actually. It's but before you know it's about anyone, the actual space, the actual sound of that song, you're so close, aren't you?
What is really... And I think the next record that we do, there's definitely... I'm going to put more bass guitar in it, because that's one thing... A bass sits lovely in the mixes that we've done. But on that, what I really love is that massive bass guitar, real low end. And The thing is, you can do that when you haven't got many instruments. The problem is, the more instruments that you've got, and the space gets filled up, and you've got to be very careful with all the frequencies when you're mixing and producing a record. Mm. But the beauty of that is because it's so simple, you know, it's a magical vocal, because his vocal is just, or her vocal, sorry, is just absolutely remarkable. And that tremolo guitar, which she's just to die for, it's just gorgeous, beautifully played, great sound, massive bass, and then the drums, and that's it, you know?
Mm.
Just beautiful.
You know, I was just thinking then, you know, like you've got a stream and the bass in that kind of track, it's like, you know, you've got these old big rocks, and you've got a very shallow stream and very and nothing much else going on, but maybe a little paper boat sailing on the top.
Yeah.
But the bass and the ripples and the way that the bass affects the water in such a shallow space, that's what the bass does in that track. Because there's space for it to kind of resonate and to affect something. It's shallow enough, if you know what I mean. It has space. I don't know. I was just thinking about it because it's such a rocking song as well. This, it feels like you were just privy to something very, very, very humbly unique that you won't get unless you're really somewhere that you can't anticipate, where life takes you.
And I think it's reflected by the subject matter, because she was a big friend of Lou Reed.
But you didn't actually know about it, because in the press release she says, a friend of mine, see, expressed to me in the final months of his life that the simplest sensations had begun to feel almost rapturous. A carer, this is it, had placed a shard of ice on his tongue one day, and it was such a sweet and unbelievable feeling that it caused him to weep with gratitude. Now that's...
Yeah. It's just remarkable.
It's hardcore.
It is hardcore, yeah.
Well, Lou Reed was hardcore, and I think that's... It transformed the way he was seeing things, I think. And I think that's what life's all about, isn't it? Music's about that. It transforms the way you see things and experience life and love.
Well, totally. And I mean, you know, I personally have followed Anoni ever since she was with the band Anthony and the Johnsons.
Yeah.
And that first album was just, and the second album was just remarkable. I remember listening to them. And we've had this track on the show before, but we love it so much, and it does get us.
Yeah.
You know, and all when it comes on, so we thought we'd play it again because it's such a beautiful song.
Well, when she wanted to do this album, she calls it Blue Eyed Soul, trying to go back to her roots and just saying, you know, like she grew up with, like, people like Alison Moyet and Boy George, you know, they saved her life.
Mm.
So you have this kind of, she just wanted to be true to her kind of roots of where she was. But I just love the fact that so, like the experimental theatre wing of New York University. So she was in Manhattan in 1990, and then she formed the Black Lips Performance Cult. And I love the fact that they did a new play every Monday at 1 o'clock in the morning at the Pyramid Club on Avenue A. I mean, those venues, those scenes, just doing something fresh and new, you know. You're not about selling 30 million albums or whatever, you know. You're actually
just... It's
all about
art rock, again. It's a very similar thing, art pop, you know, whatever it is. But whatever it is, we love it.
McCalman and Butler. Yes! The debut single from their debut album, The Sound of McCalman and Butler. The single was released on the 15th of May 1995, and the album was released 6 months later on the Hut record label, and it was their first UK hit, peaking at number 8 on the UK singles chart. And it's one of the only songs I actually got up and started dancing around the studio to. Talk about feel-good injection in every part of your body and your soul. I love that song.
I'm a fan of great vocalists. I love great singers. And this is one of the great singers. Absolutely. Dave McCormack. What a voice. I remember seeing it live. I think it was on Late with Jules.
It was. We watched it the other week.
Soaring.
Oh,
vocal.
So natural as well.
And the first track, of course, Brian Ferry, another remarkable vocalist. You might not like his style, but I love his style.
What do you mean, Frankie Howard singing in the shower?
That's what. Yeah, in a horror film.
In a horror film or something.
That's what somebody said when they rejected an A&R guy. Rejected him originally.
Sorry.
And then, of course, Anoni. Her voice is just absolutely sensational.
This song,
and then this.
Yeah, but three in a row.
But one of the things about Bernard Butler, of course, because he was in Suede, and he was one of those guitar players that were like, he was another Johnny Marr type of guy, you know. And the reason why this track came up is that the other week I published something on our blog, which is vibes.star-campbell.com. And I do occasionally about the music with missed or music that excites me. And, you know, I was going through stuff and I put Blur in there. And, of course, as soon as you get into Britpop, I start digging around and go on that rabbit hole. And then these, and the next one as well, I'm not going to tell you what it is yet, but this and the next track came up. And I listened to it and I forgot how just great it was. And then there's a video of them doing it live. And I can't remember which show it was. I think it could be MTV, but it's a live one. And Bernard Butler's going mad. I think he's had a bit
too much. That's the Jules one, I think, wasn't it?
There's two. Yeah,
okay.
Two of mine, yeah. And he's having a bit of Bolivian marching powder because
he's jumping around
like a lunatic. And then there's these string players that are trying to keep it all together behind these screens. And, you know, they're all there. And it was fantastic. But, you know, it does sound like they wanted a 60 sound and they've achieved it, you know. Using the wall of sound technique, you know, that's which is one of those classic, the Phil Spector thing, wall of sound. And they love vinyl. And this just sounds like a 60s vinyl. But to me, you know, I've always loved this guitar player. I love Suede, you know, Brett Anderson and that lot. You know, because things are Suede, and we might play some over the next few weeks, actually, because... Do you know, I think they were the most successful artist that was ever released, you know, right from the word go. When they came out, their album just went just stratospheric, literally. It was one of those times, you know.
Yeah.
And a great band, but he's a fantastic guitar player. But on here, it's his songwriting. Mm. And they met in Camden, is that
the
right?
The Jazz Cafe, because I think when Bernie Butler...
Bernard.
Yeah. It says here, you know, when I looked into the interviews, so he spent 6 months. He lost a lot of friends when he split the band, and he wrote a lot of dark stuff. And he just happened to meet David in the Jazz Cafe, and said, "Look, I've got this song. Do you want to try it out?" And he came back to him a couple of days later, and they sang the first verse. And he didn't have a second. He just said, "We'll sing it again."
Yeah.
And you know. Oh, I just love it. I just love... There's something quite uplifting and joyous about it as well, and especially when you see him live, you know, I'd love to be in the room with him because there's one thing to hear it and it makes me grin, and to be in the room, you actually can't buy that, if you know what I mean, even though I know you buy a ticket. But to have those moments of going out live and having those moments of joy, I mean, it's what life's all about, isn't it?
Yeah, and that song as well, there's an awful lot of songwriting complexity in it. It changes key a couple of times in terms of the way it is. You know, it's just a really well-constructed and recorded song, you know. And it was produced, co-produced by Mike Hedges, who's known, of course. For the Manic Street Preachers, because they did, you know, If This Tree's... What's it called? I can never remember the...
You talking about If You Tolerate This?
This Is My Truth, Tell Me Yours. Yeah, and If You Tolerate This, which is on that.
Yeah, yeah.
But he recorded it at his studio that he created in France, this Mike Hedges.
And,
you know, he was a real flavour of the... Well, years, actually. Not flavour of the month, but flavour of the years. And I think he really captured the imagination of Bernard Butler on this. I'm not sure how much Bernard Butler, I might be doing him down here, had to do with the actual sound of the thing, but it really, really sounds fantastic.
The cat by the sink is not what you think. Oh, take me home. A shop with shoes so hot they were sure to blow your mind. Running so fast I can taste the past. Oh, take me home. Save.
You're listening to the Supertone Show with Susie Starlight and Simon Campbell, and that was the Seahorses, opposed to the Shy Horses, which was that band with Mark Riley and Matt Ratliff. That's right.
Matt Ratliff, that's right.
Anyway, no, this Lover's Law released the first single from their only studio album, Do It Yourself, released on the 28th of April 1997 via Geffen Records. The album was released a month later. This is one of the songs from the album.
Yes.
And, you know, it is fantastic. Of course, with Jimmy Page on guitar. Oh, sorry, John Squire. Because John Squire there is pulling out his every Jimmy Page like he can possibly manage and doing a pretty good job of it. He's a good guitar player. And what I love about his guitar, and I've stopped wishing on about guitar because everybody knows I love guitar sounds and stuff, but that is one of the classic Marshall Les Paul sounds. It's beautiful. It really is. He's got a great guitar sound. And that open tune riff at the beginning is to die for. Fantastic. Great. And of course, if you don't know, John Squire was the guitarist in...
Go on.
The Stone Roses.
What, one of those bloke bands?
Yes, one of those bloke bands from Manchester. But he was, along with Johnny Marr and Bernard Butler, was talking about before, you know, were that some of that new wave of beautiful British guitar playing excellence. And, you know, I love America. I love American music. I love so many things about American players. I think they're very controlled, they're very accurate, you can't argue with Derek Trucks. He's one of the best guitar players, slide guitar players ever to live. He's brilliant, beautiful, controlled, but they don't have that edge of a British guitar player. This is somebody with that amp turned fucking loud.
Yes.
And old, you know, Tony Visconti, who produced the record, he'll have been there going, holy shit. And there's an improvised bit in the middle of that jam, and it's great, and he's making mistakes, and he's going for it.
Yeah.
Absolutely fantastic. Anyway.
It reminded me a bit of Cream, actually, because he was almost, the bass player was almost going into sort of a Jack Bruce territory. He started at the beginning, but then he didn't. He didn't do anything half as complex as what Jack Bruce would do. And he also didn't have the attitude. Because I think, one thing I've realised as well, you play bass and it's compressed to shit anyway. So, you know, in terms of dynamics, it can be flattened out. But it's when you play it, I think that's where you get your space to actually, to put your character into the song, really. It's the timing of it. Because to me, tonally and textually, unless you're playing something really open and uncompressed, it doesn't really make that much of a difference in terms of dynamic range, but in terms of when you play it and your attitude towards that note or the melody or whatever it is that you want to do, and especially the groove. And you can feel it. I mean, I got up then dancing because it almost felt like, hey, up, are we at Woodstock, you know? Because it went on for so long that you kind of imagined yourself dancing in a field with, you know, people covered in mud, you know, and a lot of people having had mushrooms or something, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, in that song as well, there's a couple of breakdowns. There's a classic Stone Roses type breakdown in there. And then where it goes, da 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 da, it's almost a bit Donovan, it's a bit Yes, it's a bit sort of, Chris Squire sort of thing, and John Anderson, I should say, singing and stuff, and you can hear that in it, and there's all these influences, but there's absolutely no doubt that, because basically it's a blues song, this, and there's no doubt that John Squire is getting his great big Led Zeppelin dick out on this one.
Yeah. The one thing, you know, because he auditioned for vocalists and what's his name? Yeah, Chris Hell.
Yeah.
He saw him by chance at Fibber's in York when he was drinking with his guitar tech, Martin Herbert. And so they auditioned. Oh, no, that was Stuart Fletcher, the bassist.
Bass player, yeah.
They found Stuart, the bass guy, at Fibber's. And they auditioned the singers. And Chris Helm was discovered busking outside Woolies in York. And he said that he chose him out of all the others. He said the only thing that didn't make him trust him so much is that he closed his eyes when he sang. He said only folk singers do that.
Mm.
Lonnie Holly and Michael Stipe, Oh Me Oh My, released as a single on the 11th of January 2023 and the title track of his album released 2 months later on the Jag Jaguar record label. And the album also includes collaborations with artists including Sharon Van Etten and Bon Iver's Justin Vernon.
Great.
What? There's so much history in that voice. So much experience. Can you... You feel like you're... You just want to not say anything because it's so powerful.
Well, he only... He's an artist, principally.
Yeah, I've never heard of him.
A visual artist. And he only started recording music about 10 years ago.
Yeah, well, I think he's 62.
He's 60, yeah.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
God.
It really is. And I heard it, you know, a few months back, and it was featured on this... these blogs, the music I'd been listening to. And it just really got me because the whole record is really, really good, but I love the production. And this is the epitome of art rock, of course. He's an artist and it's sort of rock. So, but the production by Jackknife Lee, what a fantastic name. I wish I could call myself Jackknife Lee. Hi. And, hi, my name's Jackknife Lee. You know, imagine picking up the phone. Brr, brr. Jack Duff Lee, you know, what do you say? Anyway, there we go. But it's just a beautiful produced song. It's got that's almost that big lush soundscape, you know, a bit like Low, that type of thing, you know, like, all that shit going on in the background. Anyway,
and the vocal, so intimate.
Great vocal.
You got to check this guy out, though. His artwork is stunning. I mean, it's his history. It's tragic in a way. I just can't believe what he's been through. So he was born in 1950 in the Deep South, the 7th of 27 kids.
No.
Yeah. He was sold into a different home as a child for just a bottle of whiskey. Then he was hit by a car and dragged, pronounced brain dead, and spent months in a coma. And then after recovering, he was sent to the notoriously abusive Alabama Industrial School for Negro Children, which is basically... a prison camp. They were working, they were cotton picking during the day, they weren't fed right. There was one thing, they were picking corn out of cowpats just to try and eat because they were underfed. They were told they would be up to no... They would never do anything with their lives. I mean, it was just abuse. And he lived in the Jim Crow South. So, I mean, this guy's got... Do you know what I love about him, though? It's like he's seeing... He still cares. He's saying to you, it's not okay, but what he's saying, with this history, with this experience, let's make something from it.
Yeah.
Let's, when a family apparently didn't have enough money for gravestones, he made some gravestones, you know, out of sandstone. And, you know, he's very much, he's real and he's looking at the planet right now with this album.
Hmm.
I think he's just wanting to really... look at our existence together as humans, as humanity, as a community.
Well, it's definitely
check him out.
And it's on Bandcamp as well, which we love Bandcamp, of course. It's the home of independent artists and new music. Like our new record is not available to be streamed.
No.
Lonnie's is, so you can be getting on Spotify, but buy it if you like it from Bandcamp.
Yeah. So there you go, that's the end of the show.
It is indeed. But we're going to play out with a Manchester band, which you know.
Well, the Dorritty column, which is really interesting because I have a story. Now, when I was studying media and performance at Salford, we did we went to Edinburgh Fringe and ran a venue for a couple of weeks. It was part of the course. You had to sort of run a venue. We were in a, you know, I was stage managing, we were acting, we were doing everything, running the whole thing. And after that, I met a lighting engineer called John Buddy, and he got me my first ever stage management gig through Bruce Mitchell at Manchester Light and Stage. And I was stage managing in the City Festival. I was in Rockworld.
Rockworld.
Yeah. And I did that for quite a few years. So it was through Bruce. And so I've worked with Bruce on and off for years. And he's the guy, the lift opens and there's this Manchester bloke with a monocle stood there in the lift. He always used to walk in with presents. I mean, such a fun guy. And he told me, we used to chat a lot, and he said, oh, you know, you look out over from my house across a graveyard at the back. I said, blinking heck, Bruce, how'd you sleep?
Wow, that's amazing.
So, I mean, it's lovely. You and I have both got stories of people we've worked with and we know through Manchester. And the Dorritty column, I saw them at a gig in Manchester Cathedral once, you know. And it was funny sitting in church on church pews, watching them play.
Yeah, rock and roll.
And
band,
go, there's
yeah.
Bruce.
Well, this came to my attention through a guy called Ned Raggett, who writes for Pitchfork. He writes for a lot of people. And on Mastodon, he posted something about this Guardian article where it talks about Vinnie Riley, who's the guitar player. You know, everybody loves Vinnie Riley. He's supposed to be a great guitar. Well, he is a great guitar player. But, so this huge thing. So look it up on the Guardian. It's about Vinnie Riley. It's about the Durruti column. And we're going to play out now with the Durruti column.
Love again.